This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
Welcome to Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast, with your hosts, Dennis and Beth Keithley. Welcome to Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast. We are hosts, Dennis and Beth Keithley, and tonight we are going to be covering the first episode of the series, A Vulcan Hello. So, Beth, what did you think overall about the debut of Star Trek Discovery?
You know, I was pleasantly surprised. There had been enough pre-launch things with timing and people leaving, especially Fuller, that I was a little concerned. I feel like the bar was low. However, the bar could have been a lot higher and it still would have cleared it. It definitely had the look of the Star Trek universe. The uniforms, for example, were reminiscent of the Enterprise, but felt like they had evolved since then. It was nice to see the old school phaser, although, well, we'll get to why, but not a great reason why we saw it. And the flip communicators made me happy too. So a really good start. I feel like as a Star Trek fan, we were catered to without being pandered to, and I'm content.
Yeah, you're definitely much more of an old school fan than I am. What did you think of the opening theme? Theme music and the graphics that they displayed?
The theme music I loved. Really liked the music. The graphics, I think they were going for something that I didn't quite get. Was it fine that they moved away from the spacescapes? Sure. Am I 100% sure it needed to be blueprints? I'm not sure about that, but that seems so petty and nitpicky that, you know, I watched it and I was like, okay, but then the show started and, like I said, it looked like Star Trek. What did you think?
I really liked the music. I thought it was a nice homage to the classic Star Trek themes without being an exact duplication. So I was very pleased with that. And I kept hoping it wasn't going to be something like the introduction to Enterprise, which was, you know, that pop song that they had written, and it was visions of various vessels, seagoing and spaceworthy and otherwise, that they had done for Enterprise. And I was hoping they were going something a bit more classical. And I did like the retro feel with some of the phasers and the communicators that they showed and the starship. So I was good with that. Well, let's dive into the episode itself. This starts with a shot of the Klingons, and we have a very dark-skinned Klingon. It's a very new look that they have.
But glittery and metallic. Like, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and he's speaking in pretty much all Klingon at the time. He's kind of pumping up his people and giving them a speech about beware. And this is the only part he switches to English, about beware those that say they come in peace.
Well, if you are a hardcore Star Trek nerd, you know that for most of Klingon history, the 24 noble houses have always been in conflict with one another. And it has been in many of the versions of the Star Trek universe, especially in the Klingon universe, a challenge for the Klingon Empire. The Klingon Empire must unite in order to rise up. And so that the idea that the 24 noble houses were attempting to do this again, or that somebody was attempting to unite the noble houses, was consistent with Star Trek history. That made sense to me. I was like, okay, yeah, we're doing that.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like a very classic Klingon thing to do. It is a war-mongering race, for lack of a better description. And we'll get into this a bit more, especially with some later scenes in the episode. But what did you think about the new appearance? What did you think about the new armor? As you said, they seem very much like Klingons with their speech, although I was getting a little tired of having to read all the subtitles just to understand them, and their general attitudes, but they very much had a new look to them.
You know, the original Klingons, you know, I don't know it's the first time they appear in the original series, but certainly the most famous appearance is in The Trouble with Tribbles, where they don't look particularly, I mean, they look alien, but not capital A alien, which is what I think it has been achieved. I don't mind you playing with the aliens. I mean, one of the big complaints, for lack of a better word, people have with any sci-fi genre is, wow, why do all the aliens have, you know, two legs, two arms, and a head? It's like, because that's kind of easy for us to put on the screen. So if you're going to play a little bit with the Klingons, keeping them so that they are somewhat visually familiar, but acknowledging that we've come a really long way with costume and makeup and prosthetics and things like that. And I'm going to revision the Klingons and have some fun with it. Yeah, they were cool. I mean, they were a little glittery, but it didn't bother me so much.
Yeah, I would have preferred something a little bit closer to the traditional. I don't want to say traditional, because you just pointed out the original series Klingons were completely different than the Next Generation. Well, not completely, but different enough. I would have preferred something akin to what we've come to know from the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, that view of the Klingons. But
and I agree with you, except I'm going to push back a little bit, because for me, I am so used to Worf. I am so used to Klingons are now our friends, that I think having that visual difference helped me remember that this is taking place 10 years before the original series. The Klingons are not our friends right now. And yeah. I think if there had been something like, oh, this could be Worf's cousin, I would have been like, oh, Worf's cousin, how are you? So yeah.
That took us up to the commercial break, and we were watching this first episode on CBS before everything moves to CBS All Access. When they get back from the break, we get to meet the first two members of the Starfleet portion of this cast. So that's Michael Burnham, played by, how do you pronounce his name, Sonequa, Martin Green, and Captain Georgiou, played by Michelle Yeoh. And they're on a drought-ridden world attempting to find water for an alien species there that I guess propagates through eggs. And there's been a climactic shift, and without some water, they're going to die off. After trekking through the desert for a while, they manage to restart the well, and there's just some general conversation about Michael Burnham, who's the first officer to Captain Georgiou, about possibly getting her own ship at some point. And they're kind of taking stabs at each other, pokes at each other about getting lost and how they're going to meet up with the ship, and there's an impending storm. So what did you think about our first two members of the their ship is the Xinju. Did I get that right?
I was pronouncing it Xinju.
Xinju, yeah. I need to see how that's written. But what did you think about the first two members of our cast?
I thought that was very interesting. I thought it was well done. I mean, there you needed to hear about two lines from Burnham before you knew that there was some Vulcan in there somewhere. Well, you know, not a spoiler. People knew that going in who'd done any of the reading. But they did a very good job with an initial character introduction that let that happen. One of the things I was concerned about from the trailers, that there was no humor. And there's a lot of humor in Star Trek. And there was humor in that, the whole, like, you should trust me, we're lost. And, oh, you know, it was just a very genuine conversation between people who'd known each other for a long time, set up that character dynamics pretty well, and also had enough humor, not like, ha ha, that was so funny. But like, this is a conversation where people are smiling and happy to see each other. And like I said, set up Burnham is somehow Vulcan adjacent.
Right. I like the way they ended the scene where, you know, they're kind of ribbing each other for being lost. And it turns out that Captain Georgiou has led them on a trek through the desert so that their footprints forms the Starfleet insignia.
Yeah,
and
that
so
was good.
The Xinju was able to then find them. And
did you like the Prime Directive call out? Did you catch the General Order one?
Yes, I did.
Prime Directive.
Right.
Alive and...
But I didn't get it because it seemed like the aliens knew they were there.
Oh, it was totally violated. That actually made me happy when the alien like saw the people. I was like, way to violate the Prime Directive on your first run out, guys. Be yeah. part of the world.
Story then shifts back into space, and they are investigating some damage that's been done to a Starfleet communications relay. And they quickly determine that this is not a natural occurrence, and we meet the next significant member of the crew, Lieutenant Saru, played by Doug Jones, who is a very tall alien species. I'm not exactly sure what the name of that species is. On his planet, they were prey. And
they were livestock. I think they were like the cows of the planet.
Exactly. He mentioned that either you were a predator or you were prey, and his people were bred for as livestock. And it's completely binary there. There are no food chains. It's just you eat or you're eaten. And he is very skittish during this show. He's got very much a prey instinct where he wants to run and hide. And as things develop, he's constantly begging the captain to get out of there, that they need to go. But as they're investigating this, the destruction or the damage to the relay, they find something in the debris field that is being obscured. What do they call that? What kind of field?
The scatter field.
The scatter field, right. And so Michael Burnham heads out on a booster pack and a spacesuit to go investigate all this. And she gets there and discovers some sort of an ancient beacon.
And what I want to know is how many people put a thruster pack on their holiday wish list.
Yeah.
Because I want a thruster pack so that I can do all the flybys in the land.
And so she's not there for very long when she gets confronted by a Klingon warrior. And she engages her thruster and ends up driving his batleth back through him and kills him. Now, there's a number of significant things here. This guy was the torchbearer for the Klingons, and I guess he was going to light this beacon and summon the Klingons to war in some fashion. And at the same time, we come to find out that Burnham has got some sort of back history where the Klingons play a role in her past.
Yeah, it wasn't unlike Sisko from Deep Space Nine with the Borg, that they have a history. But to go back a little bit, I think setting up for Burnham's trip, Kat wins the line of the evening with her DNA will unravel like noodles.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, Saru was very, very skittish about checking this thing out.
I still want a thruster pack.
She gets retrieved. Her suit had been damaged. It was cracked. She was unconscious.
Mm-hmm. Faceplate was damaged. First time near death.
Right. And then she was drifting helplessly in space before we go to another commercial break. When we get back, they've managed to beam her back aboard the ship. And she's recovering from, I guess, radiation poisoning. She's got blemishes all over her face and her skin.
And how did you like the dichotomy of that with the funeral of the Klingon that had been killed and her on the med bay recovering?
I hadn't thought of it that way. When I first saw those scenes, I was having a hard time trying to decide if they were doing a forward in time, backward in time type of a thing. And I couldn't tell if this scene with the funeral of the torchbearer, Rajak was his name, was happening at some point in the future that they managed to retrieve his body, because I wasn't certain what this beacon was, and if it was someplace remote and he was the only Klingon there. And so I kind of got wrapped up in all of that. But now that you mention it, that is a good point. The Klingons are laying a warrior to rest, and they have that excellent funeral scene where they announce his presence, I guess, the Stovo Corps, that a warrior is coming. In the meantime, Burnham wakes up and starts to get into panic because she knows she's found Klingons, but no one I don't want to say they don't believe her, but they're reluctant to believe her because they don't know if she's suffering from a concussion or something.
There's no evidence to it. So she comes, it's been 3 hours, nothing has happened. She comes to the bridge, burnt and hysterical and concussed, and basically saying, there are Klingons out there, we have to shoot. Is basically what she says. And while she's clearly got the trust of the captain, and as far as we can tell, has earned the trust of the captain, I think the fact that it's been 100 years since they've seen Klingons, and she comes back injured and is screaming Klingons, would be, I thought that was realistic. Like, we don't really have any hard evidence, and let's just see what happens.
Yeah, I was really glad they decided not to go with the why doesn't anyone believe me, no one believes me, you have to believe me angle when it came to the discovery of the Klingons. That is kind of a tired trope, I think, that we've seen too many television shows. But they short-circuited it.
Especially in Star Trek. The Next Generation did it all the time.
Right. But eventually they come around.
Well, because, Klingon ship decloaks.
Right. Because they arm torpedoes and phasers and target the ship, and the Klingon ship decloaks, but it's not communicating with them. And so they then have to decide what to do. Meantime, aboard this Klingon ship, the Klingons are getting ready to light the beacon. And so Cole is there looking for Rajak's next of kin, who is very reluctant. And then we get a different Klingon step up. He's pale in skin, and they refer to him as some sort of do they call him an abomination or nature's accident? Or?
Yeah, he's light. I have a note here, albino Klingon steps up. He, more importantly, I think, to the Klingons, is that he's son of none. Which means he's not associated with any of the houses, and that's pretty serious for the Klingons to be son of none.
They make a big deal about that he has no noble claim. But he sticks his hand in the fire, and he's basically purifying himself and becoming within the spirit of Kalos, is what he says, which impresses Cole. And so this Klingon's name is Vok, if I remember correctly. And he says, I see some of myself in you, and so therefore you get the honor of lighting the beacon. Which, what did they say? Like millions of lumens and photon strength when that thing was
lit? Yeah, I would like to have seen him light the beacon. Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just as boring as like pushing a green button, but I would have liked to have seen, I mean, as cool as it was to see the reaction from the ship of just this huge, just sensory overload of light and sound, I want to know so much more about that beacon.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it completely blinds the crew of the Jinzhou, and they're trying to decide what they need to do next. And so Burnham goes back to place a call to Sarek, her adoptive Vulcan father. Now, this is the second of two scenes with Sarek. The first one is a flashback when Burnham, I guess, is back on Vulcan doing some sort of testing that we've seen in the Abrams Star Trek reboot and in other places.
I've seen in the original movies when Spock, there's a flashback of Spock in those testing pods. I'm sure there's an official name. You can tweet it at us. But yeah, we're basically, I guess she's being asked to answer questions about, her past with the Klingons. And she basically has an emotional reaction, refuses to answer, pauses the computer program, and then talks to Sarek about it.
That's the backstory. It's kind of almost the exposition about her anger towards Klingons and a little bit more about her Vulcan upbringing. And so she has the second conversation with Sarek about what do they need to do in the presence of these Klingons. And he's reluctant to tell her how the Vulcans have dealt with the Klingons, because he's afraid that this is not knowledge that humans are going to be able to deal with.
So this was interesting to me, and I know you don't know either, but I'm just throwing it out there. So the Vulcans have always been part of the Federation. So the idea that the Vulcans can have a way of dealing, I think she said specifically, how did you hold them at bay? How did you hold the Klingons at bay? So that the Vulcans have a solution, but the Federation doesn't have a solution was interesting to me.
To me, it seemed like kind of a situation where the Vulcans look at themselves as big brother to the Earthlings in the Federation.
Sure.
And it's, you're not ready for these tactics. You're not ready for this knowledge. And so, we're not going to give it to you.
Right. But if the Vulcans are sort of, I like that analogy, sort of the parental units of the Federation. If they're the parental units of the Federation, I guess what we're supposed to take away is while the Vulcans at some point have dealt with the Klingons, there's nothing truly formal. Because it seems to me that if there was some formal understanding between the Vulcans and the Klingons, it would extend to the Federation.
Yeah, it was definitely nothing formal. It was, and we kind of alluded to it now, and I guess we should just say what it was. But it's the Vulcan Hello, which is the namesake of this episode, where the Vulcans, when they first encountered Klingons, the Vulcan ship got destroyed. And the Vulcans quickly learned, they don't make the same mistake twice. Anytime they encountered Klingons, they had to fire first. They had to earn the respect of the Klingons. And once they did that, they were able to open negotiations with the Klingons and prevent their ships from being destroyed on site. And so that's kept the Klingons at bay for 100 years. Well, now these Klingons are itching for a fight. With this knowledge, Burnham returns to the bridge and begs Captain Georgiou to hit the Klingon ship with everything they have. And Captain Georgiou says, we can't do that. We are the Federation. We don't fire first. The Federation looks for a diplomatic solution. And so this leads to a little bit of a mutiny because Burnham is insistent. She keeps pressing this issue in front of the rest of the crew on the bridge to the point that Captain Georgiou has no choice but to take her to the ready room, chew her out for questioning her authority on the bridge, that this will break down the chain of command if she keeps it up, to which Burnham, desperate to save, she wants to. She keeps saying that she wants to. She's going to save the captain. She's going to save the crew. She puts a Vulcan nerve pinch on Georgiou. Now, you're the more classic Star Trek fan. My memory of a Vulcan nerve pinch, anytime I saw Spock do it, is you put one of those on someone, you put them down for the count. But Georgiou recovered
sure,
from
have
this.
A quick response time. I was like, wow, she's got some.
Yeah.
Some mad nerve pinch recovery skills. I think that needed to happen, though. Burnham was trying to do was a gross violation of everything the Federation stands for, right? I mean, that's just... And when she comes back to the bridge and is basically like, we're going to do this. This is going to, you know, get ready just in case. And Lieutenant Saro is like, have you talked to the captain? Are you, is this what the captain wants? I feel like this is a mutiny. That was very appropriate to the Federation. And that was going to come to a head in a minute. But I liked how Burnham never answered the question, like never lied. Because, you know, Vulcans and I guess Vulcan-raised humans don't lie, but didn't actually ever answer Saro's question well enough.
Right, yeah. So she comes back to the bridge and she starts issuing these orders that we're going to, you know, arm the torpedo tubes, load those with torpedoes, arm the phasers, target the ship, get ready to shoot, and then Georgiou comes back out with a phaser in her hand.
How badass was that?
Yeah, it was a classic-looking plate. I love that they updated... The uniform, well, it's not an update, it's a retro uniform at this point because the show takes place 10 years before the original series.
But yeah, but they like updated from, like, if you're going to look at the Enterprise uniform mm-hmm. and you're going to look at the original series uniform and you're going to figure out how we're going to get from one to the other, the uniform from Discovery is on that path. You're like, okay, yeah, I see it. Like, eventually, yeah, we're going to get into the colors. But we don't have any red shirts, so I don't know how we're going to...
That's a good point. Yeah, because the science officer, Saru, had kind of silver mm-hmm. trim to the blue uniform, mm-hmm. and Command had a gold trim to the uniform.
And I know there was an engineer. And
there was a doctor as well, right. But I don't remember what he had.
I don't remember what he had.
Well, I think it was actually white, because it's the same, I guess, department as science.
Right.
Like Saru. Or maybe right. silver. I can't remember.
Yeah, because Spock and McCoy both were... But in engineering... I don't remember seeing red. I feel like if I had seen red, I
yeah. would. We just unfortunately didn't get as much time with the rest of the crew members. Significant time. I mean, when it came to the Federation, the big three for the moment are Burnham, Georgiou, and Saru.
Yes, but I want a whole episode on that one with the circular computer.
Oh, Circuit
head.
City?
Yeah. I'm like, who? What?
Yeah.
Yes? What's your whole story?
That just someone who became a cyborg, or is that the way their race operates, or what? But it's hard to say at this point, obviously. But so Georgiou comes back on to the bridge, and she puts an end to this attempt to attack the Klingon vessel. And it's really kind of a moot point, because the beacon goes out. Once that happens, they start detecting, I guess, warp signatures from incoming starships.
Is it the Federation?
No, it's not the Federation. It's the Klingon fleet showing up. So the plan was to assemble the Klingons to attack a common enemy. It worked. The Klingons show up. That's the end of our episode.
So did you notice, I'm sure you did, that the Discovery was not in the first episode of
Star Trek Discovery?
Yeah. Didn't bother me too much, mostly because Captain Georgiou is awesome and I could spend the whole time on her ship and be probably perfectly content. Ask me again in 5 or 6 episodes when we actually get on the Discovery, but at the moment I'm perfectly happy. But so yeah, what did you think?
I'm looking forward to seeing Jason Isaacs as Captain Lorca at some point.
Sure.
I think from the teaser that they gave us for the next episode for episode 2 that we're going to see plenty of him, because it looks like the Federation is going to respond.
The Federation was, 2 hours out?
Yeah, they were on their way.
Yeah.
And so I haven't looked far enough into this series to see to know what's coming on this, but at least they're teasing a Klingon Federation war of some sort.
Yes,
so,
that would be appropriate.
Right, and so we got that coming. But yeah, I guess let's get into some final thoughts on this then. I mean, I was very pleased with this. I like the crew that we've got mm-hmm. on the Xinjiang. I'm going to get that right at some point.
Xinjiang,
thank you. At some point, I like that. I like the dynamic. I think it is I like the look of the ship. I like the look of the technology. I like some of the retro effects.
Trek did it feel to you? I mean, because here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
Was it Star? Because is it in the Star Trek universe, or did you feel like this was a fun sci-fi show?
There was enough Star Trek elements that I felt very much at home in the Star Trek universe with this. It didn't quite have the Discovery, no pun intended, element of the original series or the Next Generation. You know, it seems very much more a Cold War type of a show, the sci-fi. But, you know, the opening scene with Georgiou and Burnham on that planet, that seemed very in the vein of the Prime Directive helping other cultures that we've come to know and love in Star Trek episodes. How about you?
Yeah, you know, we're a little too soon to see how much of the humanist aspect of Roddenberry's original vision has come into the show. Certainly, Captain Georgiou was embodying that with the idea that, you know, Star Trek doesn't, or Starfleet doesn't shoot first. And she did, there were a couple of things like that where she said, or maybe Burnham said it, but there was a conversation in which, you know, this thing might not be evil. They might be lost. They, you know, we don't know, and we can't assume. We can't just assume that something that is there is inherently bad, which is in line with Star, you know, to assume that it's good until we learn that it is not. I also really liked her line, you know, the sarcasm necessary? And she said, you know, necessary, no, but I like it.
Yeah.
I really like her. And that had a very, again, to the humor. I mean, that's not ha-ha funny, but it is a smile funny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of humor that I was happy to see. So, yeah, I liked it. Like I said, I had been really concerned about it. The trailers made it look really dark and serious. And, you know, there were serious elements on it. I mean, there was a mutiny. Kind of serious. The Klingons are coming to kick some butt. Kind of serious.
Mm-hmm.
Burnham makes first contact with the Klingons in a century and kills the guy, like, what, 3 seconds?
Right.
Like,
not
the best first contact ever.
This certainly had a different feel than Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager and Enterprise. I have a harder time seeing something like a Mirror Universe episode.
You can get one.
Well,
we've been promised.
Well, that's great. That just kind of seems, in some ways, more lighthearted type of things than the feeling I got from this episode. This is a much more serious tone to it than what I've come to expect from a lot of Star Trek.
It's more akin tonally to Deep Space Nine, I think,
mm-hmm.
than certainly the original series. Although that's so hard because, you know, the 60s were a long time ago and no TV show these days would try to redo the tone of a 60s television show.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to more. Well, that'll do it for our first episode covering the Vulcan Hello. Beth, why don't you tell everyone where they can find us on social media and otherwise how to get a hold of us?
Well, you can do it one of two ways. You can do it on Twitter by visiting us at Warp Trails, or we can be reached by email at warptrailspod@gmail.com. And Warp Trails is spelled the way you think it would.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone, to this RetroZap exclusive feed show covering Star Trek Discovery. This has been Warp Trails, and we will catch you next time. Live long and prosper.